Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Wait, wait, wait. Before we start, just want to make sure we're clear here. While this podcast talks about sobriety, mental health, and addiction, it is not meant to replace professional medical advice. Welcome to Sisters in Sobriety.
I'm Kathleen.
And I'm Sonia.
And we're ex-sisters-in-law, brought together in marriage and bonded through our sobriety journey.
Join us as we talk sobriety, addiction, and everything in between. You're in for quite a ride. And our Substack is buzzing with amazing content, from creative mocktail recipes to insightful courses and reflective exercises. There is something for everyone. Don't miss out. It's a great way to add some extra joy and depth to your journey. Check it out. Hi, we're Kathleen and Sonia, and you're listening to Sisters in Sobriety.
Today, we're going to continue our conversation with
Ali Shapiro. Ali is a health coach, a speaker, and creator of the Truce with Food program.
I want to just shift, and Sonia, if it's okay with you, just shift to food and alcohol. So how does alcohol affect blood sugar levels, and how does this impact your cravings?
So when, again, and this is kind of this good, bad that we've internalized, is like, it's good not to eat. It's good to override your hunger. It's good to override cravings. But alcohol really puts your blood sugar on this roller coaster ride. Mm. And both the peaks and the valleys, they create cortisol surges because your body doesn't like to have too much or too little. Our bodies are operating, I joke, on like the Apple IIe platform. I don't know if you remember Apple IIes. They were like the original Apples. That's what we had growing up. We had one of those growing up. But they're basically, they don't understand our bodies. And this is why it's so important for me that people take food out of this moral issue of you're a good person or bad person based on what you eat or what you weigh. And we need to look at biological realities, which don't have any morals. But when we eat too much or too little, and especially with alcohol, and we get these peaks and valleys with our blood sugar, cortisol gets stimulated. And not only does that tend to make us store fat, but it also tends to cause cravings. But it also, I think what's not talked about enough is it desensitizes us to flavor. So we end up needing more and more of the foods to register the same rate of satiety. So it's basically like an addiction to intensity. So if you think about when times in your life you've been really stressed, perhaps, and you go to food, it's not registering the same way as like when you're on vacation and relaxed. And so I think that's one way that doesn't get talked about a lot in terms of cravings. But I think what ends up happening with alcohol, and what I've learned from my own clients, is it kind of satisfies that craving at first, but then it comes roaring back because of the sleep you don't get, which is a stress on the body. Any stress on your body is going to influence your blood sugar. And then it's also you wake up exhausted and tired and your blood sugar has tanked. And so you're already starting the day at a deficit. And a lot of people think it's good to skip breakfast or skip meals, and then they just get caffeine and the whole cycle starts again. So, but one of the things that from an emotional belonging standpoint around cravings is a lot of my clients, they feel like, well, I'm not drinking, so I deserve to eat this. And that's a big source of craving, that's an emotional craving. It's not physical. Does that register, Sonia? I'm like,
heck yeah. Yeah. I still do that sometimes. It's like, well, I'm not drinking. So it does give me that. Yeah. Yeah. It kind of gives me permission to make worse choices because like, well, I worked out. I'm not drinking. I slept well. What else do you want from me? I can have ice cream. Yeah.
Yeah. Can I ask you, Ali, how do you know the difference between an emotional craving and a physical craving?
Ooh, I love this. Yes,
I
love this.
Sometimes I feel like they're tricky for me. Like, I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know.
Well, and it's hard. You know, this is a whole tangent, but I'm raised, my son is almost five. And again, every framework has a lot to offer, but also has its drawbacks. And I think of intuitive eating, how it's mm-hmm. like, well, if you just listen to your body, you'll know. But my son, if we didn't make him eat, he would rather play all day. And I know you're not supposed to make kids eat and it'll balance out. But like, if we didn't have regular meal times for him, everyone kind of makes it seem like, oh, kids know their bodies and all this stuff. I don't know if that's true. And then you have a food system that is trying to hijack their satiety. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. we were at a rest stop on the Pennsylvania Turnpike and we went into 7-Eleven to get gas. And he saw the like big Slurpee, like electric blue, electric green. He's like, I want one of those. And I was like, no, you're not throwing in a car seat for 4 hours having a sugar meltdown with me. But I'm saying all of that because I think it's harder than people mm-hmm. make it out to really learn your body. So I'm just saying, Kathleen, you're not alone is what I'm
saying. No, I agree. I agree with you because I did, Sonia knows, I did intuitive eating. I tried it. I did a whole coaching program for like a year and a half and I still couldn't figure out what my body needed. Like I still couldn't do it. Like I wasn't, is this emotional? Is this like me stressed out, tired, lonely, and that's why I'm reaching for the sugar? Is it because like my body's just like, hey, my body wants this? Or like I could never figure it out.
I always think this, it probably is pretty unhealthy, but like if it's something not good for me, I think it's an emotional craving. Like, but
this is the thing, you're labeling it not good for you.
Yeah.
And so yeah. That right away triggers me. Oh, it's not good for me.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm saying I definitely have that issue where I separate things into good and bad. And yeah, emotional would be my body can only be craving healthy food, right? Physically. The other stuff has to be emotional.
I love that example, Sonia, because that your definition of good is influenced by what your parents probably said.
Yeah.
Right. Versus like, I always give this example, but my son's birthday is going to come up in 2 weeks and he wants a s'mores theme and we're doing a s'mores cake. And to me, sharing that cake with him is so good for both of us.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. It fulfills this. Now we don't have cake all the time, but it's celebrating his birthday that he matters. And so when we think of good in the way that we've been, the inheritance of good, right? It's only that food should be functional and serving and versus like Kathleen talking about Thanksgiving. I think the process of cooking there mm-hmm. and sharing with other people, that is like a soul craving. And nature even designed food to, again, orient us to the seasons, that we belong to the land. We belong to a bigger system and a bigger order than ourselves that we need, right? It's why we give food to people when people mm-hmm. have babies and die, right? It's like that is mm-hmm. the symbolism that we belong. And it's great in those circumstances. It's not good for us when we're eating it alone and it's not making us feel good, right?
It's so interesting you just said that because not to lower the mood, but my father passed away just 3 weeks ago. And I'm good. But one of the things that touched me more deeply than anything, one of my friends in the neighborhood dropped off a casserole.
Mm.
And I needed that so badly, and it was food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was food. It was like provided the most comfort mm-hmm. and it was food, but not in a negative way, right? It wasn't. It was just like, oh, belonging. Oh my gosh, this person actually mm-hmm. cares for me. They reached out.
And they offered you rest. You don't have to cook all night.
Are you looking to reset your relationship with alcohol? Look no further than our self-paced 7-day reset program. In just 1 week, you'll gain the tools and support you need to kickstart your journey to a healthier, more balanced lifestyle. Our program includes daily audio, helpful exercises, and guided reflections. And best of all, it's on your time. Head over to sistersinsobriety.substack.com and let's take that first step together towards a better you.
Deborah McNamara, who I mentioned earlier, her book Nourished is amazing. I actually had her on my podcast, episode 280, Everyone Insatiable,
who's
talk about how her work intersects with my work. So for adults, because she's a child psychologist, but she talked about how food growing up is ideally coupled with rest. It's supposed to bring us to rest so we can offer up our vulnerable emotions. And so, Sonia, you're like, woo!
So fast food, grabbing like a burger as you're driving to work, like eating it or whatever. This is like, no.
No,
obviously
right,
we know
right.
this, but no, for more reasons than one.
Right. And so you can see why we end up with quote unquote emotional eating mm-hmm. because we're working so hard at food that we can't process we're supposed to be at rest and sharing meals with other people at our dinner table. What's the best part of your day? The hardest part of your day? Mm-hmm. Like offloading, but instead the focus becomes on what's everyone eating and stuff like that. But that's with your neighbor, right? Mm-hmm. You felt I mattered. And that's supposed to be that. Food is wonderful because how do you convey that to someone at that time? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, this is the symbolism mm-hmm. of that. And so I want food to still be that for people, but I don't want it to be that for people when they're not actually getting the belonging. So to answer your question, Kathleen, about physical and emotional.
Because she does.
Yeah.
Sorry.
I think it's I think it's a lot more complicated than most people think. And yeah. I think that we can think of it in three buckets. There's when you're physically hungry, like when you can feel, and what's challenging about physical hunger and intuitive eating, I think, is they only tend to register hunger in your stomach. Do mm-hmm. I feel full? Do I feel satiated? But if your body is no longer, if your body has sufficient nutrition, you will feel a lack of anxiety. You will feel energized. You will feel satiated. And so you will feel, everyone has these individual quirks. One of my clients was like, oh my God, when she did some of the food experiments I gave her, she's like, my foot used to like tap anxiously and that stopped. And so everybody has its own quirks to know that like, oh, you're satiated. So when we only look in our stomach to feel like, am I 80% full? We're not looking for our body's version of satisfied. Because again, our body needs nutrition to keep the lights on, to give us energy. And what's hard about that is so many of us have normalized exhaustion. We've mm-hmm. normalized cravings. We've normalized anxiety. We've normalized just feeling depressed and down. So I think physical hunger is the easiest way for people to start with is like if they start feeling a lack of cravings is probably where I would start for people and they start feeling more energized. And I would go meal to meal. A lot of my clients, I'm running my Why Am I Eating This Now program right now, which just focuses on the emotional. And the conversation came up with people saying, you know, but I do feel better when I'm on Whole30 or for as long as I can stick with it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's not Whole30. It's not the zone. It's these underlying tenets, biological realities of blood sugar. First and foremost. Blood sugar, how you eat. So don't even pay attention to Whole30 or the zone, whatever someone's commercially calling this. I have, I can give you the link. It's a free breakfast experiment that I give to people. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I want you to try this oatmeal breakfast, or I want you to try eggs with avocado. And there's no moral judgment here, but I want you to pay attention for 1 to 3 hours. And I give a whole sheet of what you should be paying attention to. I mean, it's like 5 things. And it's like, I want you to start paying attention internally, not what you've been told is good or bad to eat, right? I mean, some people still believe eggs are bad, right? But I've been doing this experiment mm-hmm. with people for 10 years. And it's like, I heard eggs were bad, but they make me feel so good. And I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. if you feel good and healthy now, that's the best chance you have of feeling good and hungry later, instead of feeling like deprived and starved and not well. So having people pay attention to these true health metrics that have nothing to do with weight doesn't mean you might not lose weight or gain weight. I mean, who knows? But to actually change, adults need really quick feedback and quick wins. And so you want to say like, oh, did I feel much more creative in the morning? Like, these are the questions that you want to start to ask meal to meal.
Yeah.
And you'll realize there's no one diet. It's just your blood sugar balance. So I think people starting to learn to balance their blood sugar it's easy. People start to realize about 50% of their emotional eating was deregulated blood sugar. So
oh my
a lot
gosh.
Of this
is, really?
Yes.
What?
Yes. Yes.
No.
A lot of this is about clearing up stuff so that you can hear yourself emotionally. So I can send you the link to that breakfast experiment.
Send the link for sure. Yeah. We'll put it on.
Kathleen hates this, but it brings up an interesting thing. What do you think of semaglutide?
Yeah. So I am always like agnostic about interventions because I think you have to look at like, you know, things. So some of my clients are on them and some are not. And I think they're being used incorrectly. Mm-hmm. So the dose determines mm-hmm. the poison, right? Anyone who is on any medication often knows that the dosing, like, you know, my dad has a very serious diagnosis and his medication is like always trying to find the right medication dose, right? And so I think with these peptides, I think of them as peptides because they are basically manufacturing satiety, hormones that the body manufacturers. I think when people are using them in conjunction with basically strength training, a whole foods diet, and actually low dosing them, because the way that they've been, the suggested dosage was just to get the FDA to approve them, and the FDA just needed to see results. So it wasn't very scientific. So I think it gives people a leg up. I think sometimes it can help people. I have some clients who they were doing all the things, but because of age, because of trauma, because of stress, their insulin sensitivity was just off. And this is a more delicate conversation of that health. That is why I want us to take weight out of a moral issue. I just don't think what you weigh says anything about you. And I think it's wonderful that we've had the Health at Every Size movement to start to bring up some of this stuff. But there, as you age, as there is a certain tipping point where if you continue to gain weight, there's a metabolic storm that can happen. But it's not a moral issue. It's a biological reality. So I think some of these peptides can help people feel satiated again, feel like they have a chance at this. Because again, the way that I view it is our built environment is set up to make people sick. Like you have to work so hard to be healthy that why are we penalizing people? And I think if this wasn't a weight loss drug and there wasn't so much obesity stigma and fat stigma, we wouldn't even be having these conversations. So so that's my thought on that.
Sonia knows I have like some viewpoints on it because I think I am worried. And then also for myself, I feel like it's being used as another tool for disordered eating. And so where people who do not need it are using it, and it's actually just another tool for massively disordered eating.
Yeah, I guess I would say it depends on the person. Because I know the clients that I'm working with, like they do, because of our work together, they do all the things. Mm-hmm. And they were still struggling with things like PCOS and infertility or edema and joint pain. And the other thing that at these low doses, some of these peptides can be really healing and regenerative. So,
did you know your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? That's right. It's not just about your birth date. Your body could be older or younger than you think. That's where True Diagnostic comes in. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age, plus get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part, it's all done from the comfort of your own home. No prescriptions, no lab visits, just a simple test sent right to your door. By tracking your biological age, you can actually see how the changes you make, whether it's to your exercise, diet, or sleep, affect your health over time. It's about taking actionable steps to improve your well-being. Oh, and if you're wondering about high-profile people taking it seriously, Brian Johnson, the guy who's working on reversing aging, and I watched his documentary on Netflix, uses True Diagnostic to track his progress. Ready to find out your biological age? Right now, our listeners can get 20% off their entire order at truediagnostic.com by using the code CIS2025 at checkout. That's True Diagnostic, TRUDIAGNOSTIC.com. Just use the code SIS2025. 2025 to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Oh, I'm interested in the health effects of, like, if you can help people be more insulin sensitive, that makes them feel more satisfied. But it also, the health effects of that
are beneficial,
yeah.
So if you go off of it.
So if you do everything else and you're low dosing it, right?
Yeah,
and you're and you should be fine. Yeah, I mean, then this gets into like people not understanding how weight loss actually works.
Yeah.
Thinking it's just about a calorie deficit.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's about you actually. Because
no,
I, when
not.
I was
training, no, Sonia is a calorie counter. She thinks it's calories
sort of.
In, calories
yeah.
out.
I don't actually count them, but I'm aware of like how much I ate and like how much I worked out. Yeah.
Yeah. It is and it isn't. So I'm gonna ask you to hold the and. So it's how you achieve that calorie deficit because some of the people on the semaglutides, they're basically medically induced anorexia, yes. which then ends up happening is you lose all your muscle. And it's very unsafe. But I'm all about safety signals, whether it's belonging, getting the right foods, getting enough calories. So your body does not like, because your body's just like, okay, if we're eating a lot of food, that means the famine's coming. If we don't have a lot of food, it means the famine's here. Either way, we're storing fat because we need to slow this ship down. So again, the body's not looking at any of this as a moral. It's just I've got a biological imperative to keep you alive, and this is what I'm going to do to keep you alive. What's been fascinating is my clients who are low dosing it, their strength training, they're increasing their muscle mass at a very low dose because it's healing. But I'm also, and again, I do not prescribe. I'm just kind of counsel for them based on what I've listened. And my one client, her doctor wanted her to go up to the next dose, and I said, but. It's still working at this dose. She can do 10 push-ups now. She's thrilled, like, because she's also working with a trainer, right? So she's actually gaining strength. And I said, I think of everything as a safety signal. So if you're losing weight too fast, meaning more than 1 to 2 pounds a week, the body's like, and so she's feeling it out as she goes. I don't make any decisions for her, but she's staying on the first dose and she's continuing to lose. And she's sleeping better, like her moods are better. Like she's just having a lot of health benefits. And I said, when you want to come off these, what we need to do is slowly increase your calories. Because the way that I tried to lose weight in the 80s or 90s is you thought like, oh, if you're at 1200 calories, you have to stay there. No. That's not enough for your body to do what it needs to do. So she's right now at around like 1700 calories and losing about 2 pounds a week. So I said, what we're going to do, though, is if this is your goal weight needs about 2,000 calories to basically maintain your weight. So as you wean off of these, if you decide that's what you want to do, we're going to add like 50 calories a week so that because your metabolism has now adapted, but we want to get you back up to 2,000 so that you can maintain your muscle. Because weight maintenance is largely dependent on muscle. So I feel like I've gone off on a tangent. Does that make sense?
No, we went off on a tangent too.
Okay, it's like how you lose it and how you maintain it is really important rather than just a calorie deficit is a calorie deficit because you just want to pace yourself and your body, again, right now she's on 1700 calories. She needs at least that to maintain, because she's active, right? Like her basic rate, like not getting out of bed is like, 1600 calories, right? Like she needs at least that. So we also, our understanding of what a calorie deficit is also warped. Like people are trying to do 1200, 1500. Like that's.
Yeah.
So I'm just talking about sustainable weight loss, not.
That actually brings me to that next question, which I've been complaining about a lot, which is how do women in midlife struggle with food and alcohol differently than earlier stages. I know for me, if I had a dress I wanted to fit into 2 weeks before, I could just kind of like start eating salads and like all of a sudden the dress fit. And now it's like losing 5 pounds or doing any of that. Like it's just everything feels so much harder.
I went through postpartum and menopause at the same time and had so much. I was in the underworld for 3 years and I was like so proud of myself for not weighing myself, but then I was getting really bad foot pain and I got weighed a year postpartum and I was 30 pounds above my pre-pregnancy weight. And I was like, what happened? Because I don't binge. I don't. And it was during the pandemic. I walk so much. So it has taken me 3 years to lose 25 pounds. So I hear you. Like, so when I'm talking about insulin sensitivity and insulin resistance, that is exactly what you're experiencing. So as we go through menopause, estrogen really helps us stay insulin sensitive. So insulin sensitive is just kind of like you eat food and it goes into your cells pretty easily. A metaphor I often use with my clients is think of insulin is kind of like the key that unlocks the door to getting food into your system. So that registers as satiety, that registers as balanced blood sugar so you can sleep through the night. But as we decline in estrogen and estrogen goes down, it's almost like glue gets in the lock. And so it gets harder and harder for you to feel satisfied, and which means more of what you eat gets stored as fat. And so that's
terrible.
And if you don't catch, and again, there's some like about 5 pounds can be of weight gain can be healthy in the menopause transition. But a lot of times what happens because of stress, because of our food supply, because of emotional issues that we've been told are willpower and discipline, but are belonging issues, it starts to create this metabolic storm where as you become more and more insulin resistant. So you want to be insulin sensitive. The more insulin insensitive you become, what ends up happening is more things get stored as fat. You get more inflammation. And then you're also losing the protective benefits of progesterone and estrogen at the same time. And it creates this like metabolic storm that can lead to more and more weight gain that is like the, it's visceral fat. It's the fat around the organs that is dangerous. So that's where I'm saying weight loss is a very delicate conversation because, and that's why I want us to take it out of this moral issue, because then it's like, you're a good person or you're a bad person versus I'm like, no, I just want people to understand biological realities and how to be as healthy and age as well as possible. And so for my clients who are lifting and strength training, right, the semaglutides are like, and my one client who I'm talking about is going through perimenopause. It's actually helping her maintain, and your muscle can, they're now considering it like the largest organ in the body, is it can seep up so much glucose. Huh. So it helps you with that insulin sensitivity. So I think that these peptides, again, low dosed, and again, I'm not giving people dose.
No,
like this is talk to your practitioners, like, but it's something to talk to them about. And I know a lot of doctors, because we follow some Reddit threads on the topic of food noise, because that's, you know, for marketing purposes. And a lot of people in the Reddit threads are working with doctors who will keep them on lower doses and stuff. So I think it can be a tool, but I think they only work the best if you have all the other foundational stuff that is simple but not easy.
Right. So it's like you're saying basically they can work for you. They can be healthy addition to other things.
But they're like a supplement.
They're not the answer. Exactly. They're not. I say this all the time with ADHD because I have ADHD and I work with a lot of people who have ADHD that medication is one tool in the toolbox, but you need all the other tools or else like it's not going to fully work. There's going to be something else is going to happen or you're not going to like. So it's the same thing. It's one tool in the toolbox.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny that you bring up ADHD. I have a client who has she's trying to get pregnant and fertility stuff. And so she's been using these peptides, very low dose. She finds her ADHD is better on them. And she's not shopping as impulsively because she had worked through her food stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. On a low dose, there's a lot of research that these are beyond because of the healing effects on the body.
So that, again, I think peptides the longevity community has been using these for decades, right? But no one's been judging them because they're for biohacking and for productivity of increasing your lifespan. So there's a lot of research around the health benefits of these that I'm like fascinated. Like the first generation of these peptides was called liraglutide, and a big research paper came out that helps Parkinson's. It can be shown to support Parkinson's, and it's regenerating something in the brain. And one of these things these peptides have taught us is we don't really understand hunger because it's signaling something in the brain, right? I have one client, so many of her inflammatory issues went away, like literally overnight of taking this one of the I forget which one she's taking because she's a former client, but she's like her asthma, her allergies. And this is again, like chicken or egg, like it, you know, what I realized, I had pesticide exposure when I was like 5 or 6 years old. I had rash for 2 weeks, but that's when I started gaining weight. Like when I look back at like what caused me to gain weight, it was the inflammatory reaction to pesticides. So, but I thought it was a calorie issue. So I went to Weight Watchers, right? But really it was, I have, you know, and then 18 months later, I'm diagnosed with an immune cancer for having an overactive immune system. And it's like, oh my God, I thought I had a calorie problem where I had an inflammation problem.
Right.
Probably way back then. And if that would have been caught, would I have had cancer? I don't know. I mean, that's, you know, who knows? So it's teasing out health and weight is something I've had to do the past 30 years, I guess. And it's a lot more complicated. But I feel like we can't even have the conversation when we're still thinking people are good or bad based on
what they eat.
Mm-hmm. What, Kathleen?
No, I was echoing that. Like, we have to get past this good or bad. Like, we do.
That's irrelevant to me. Like, I just, and I think too, as practitioners, like, I have really worked through body image food stuff. So I don't judge anyone. I don't judge myself anymore. Even when I got on the scale then, I mean, I cried because I'm human, but it was just the bigger thing of like, I hadn't slept in 2 years. I had foot pain. Like, I was like, what is going on in my life? It's like blowing up. But I called the adult version of belonging. Like, I had my own back. Like, I didn't make any drastic decisions. I lost weight in a way that prioritized my health. And so but I'm glad that I knew how to do that because I got off a metabolic train that would have been really hard to reverse if I didn't take care of that. But I didn't look at it as like about my worth. Like, I kept up doing my life. I wasn't like, oh, I'm 30 pounds heavier, I can't do this or that. Like, I just kept living my life because I just don't see it as a value.
What's so important is I'm trying to work on teasing out the difference between health and weight. And I really want to be able to do 10 push-ups. Like, that's really important to me.
You're aging too. Like, to really be like,
seemed like a goal. But for me, it is a combination, right? Like, if I'm, know if you think, okay, if I'm X number of pounds overweight or whatever, it's going to be harder to do the push-ups, right?
Well, it depends on what kind of weight you're gaining. If it's muscle, it's going to be easier.
For sure. This is fascinating.
It's a lot more nuanced and complicated than, no one likes to hear it depends. Yeah. It's easier just like, you know, like get enraged on social media. But I do think, Kathleen, like you talking about, like, I don't want to be around people dieting and all that stuff. I think we have to go through a phase of that where we need a break from that. You know what I mean? Like, before I gave up dieting as I knew it 20 something years ago. And then I've done the deep emotional healing. Mm-hmm. So for me, I mean, I think dieting too rests on fit at any cost, and you're worthy if you're sick versus my approach is, what if weight loss can actually strengthen your relationship to yourself? It's going to be slow, but it's going to be sustainable. It may not be as much weight as you want to lose, but if we really focus on this view of safety and giving yourself the nutrition you need, the rest you need, and then doing the deep emotional work around actually getting your belonging needs satiated, and then food, you don't have to white knuckle food, you don't need keep your food in the house, keep it out of the house. It doesn't matter because it's not about the food. It just becomes food. And you learn to welcome back those awkward, silent, lonely parts of yourself. Mm-hmm. And you probably wouldn't have done this work unless it was attached to health and weight and food. Because
for sure,
fear is something that we do 3 times a day. So it really preoccupies us.
That's amazing. Ali, so I want to work with you, and I think other people are going to want to work with you. So how do people find you, and how do people work with you?
Yeah, so my favorite way for people to work with me is in my Truths of Food group. It opens in January, and it is 6 months of learning what foods work best for you, not by me telling you and being some guru, but me giving you really clear experiments so that you come to these conclusions yourself. Mm-hmm. You want to make the healthy choice instead of trying to be perfect on my plan. I don't have a plan. I just have steps. And then we work on the belonging piece. What is the story that causes you to fall off track and kick up your food noise and your food choices? And we go through that to go from this, you know, adolescent form of belonging to what we call the self-authoring of your story form of belonging. So that starts in January. People can go to alishapiro.com and they can sign up for my newsletter and they'll get all the information. And then I have my podcast, Insatiable, which I always recommend people listening to that because you'll know if, like, is this for me or not? And then I also, it's a shorter program that's running right now, which is called Why Am I Eating This Now, which runs in the fall. But by the time, so people aren't quite ready for Truths of Food. Why Am I Eating This Now just focuses on the emotional piece, which can be really helpful. And if people take Why Am I Eating This Now, I do credit what they pay towards Truths with Food. So, because this work takes a little bit of time. So it's a slow going process. And then also, if people do want to get started right away with that, after that free breakfast experiment, they could also, I have a Freedom from Cravings self-study program that's $67 that gives you experiments and really easy recipes. I don't like to cook, so these are not complicated. They're like, I have this in my fridge, recipes, because most of my clients find when they're done with our work, they don't care about food as much as they thought they did. It was just they didn't have the right foods for their body and the belonging, and they weren't getting the care they needed, which is why they had so much food noise.
Awesome, lots of choices for our listeners, that's for sure. You are a gift, Ali, honestly. You are a gift.
And we would love to have you back and go over like some of the principles of Truths with Food and that approach and talk a little bit more about like gut health, and that would be amazing.
I would love to come back anytime. Thank you for having me and being so open. That's what makes for a good conversation. So I love what you guys are doing in the world too.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to Sisters in Sobriety, and we'll see you all next week.
This was Sisters in Sobriety.
Thank you for listening and being with us today.
If you want to learn more about sobriety and meet your community, find us at sistersinsobriety.substack.com.
Are you a sister in sobriety? Then reach out on social media. We'd love to hear from you.
If you're feeling generous, leave us 5 stars and a review and follow us wherever you listen.
You'll never miss an episode. Until next time.